At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hello and welcome to the Gridiron Show, cracking show coming up for you today as we look at the good, the bad and the ugly from the past week in the NFL. We'll be joined by Super Bowl winning head coach Brian Billick as we're seeing a lot of changes across the NFL. It turns out that the idea that the COVID-19 season was going to be one where you're going to be able to bury the faults of your team and actually be able to hide behind the excuses is completely false, as we see more head coaches fired in the regular season than any year in recent memory. As always, delighted to be joined by Liam Blackburn, the editor of Gridiron Magazine. Liam, how are we doing, sir?
Good morning. Yes, very well, mate. Yourself?
I like that you said good morning on a podcast on which people could listen to it at any time of day. But I do appreciate it. Simon Clancy, how are you?
Very well. It's lockdown haircut day, so I am extremely excited.
I mean, yours already looks pretty on point, I have to say. Liam is looking a little shaggier than I'm used to.
Yeah, it's hopefully for me as well today.
Speaking of ugly, and for those who are watching this on the YouTube version, they will have noticed that my video isn't on yet. It is the 2nd of December. Oh, Matt Sherry, that's an unfair bit of hate. But we got the win this week, and so the ugly Christmas jumper is on.
For God's sake.
Christ, all right. If you're listening to the podcast, I'd just be thankful that you're listening to the podcast. I don't know what's more affecting to the eyes, the jumper or the background, and the fact they meld into this kind of technicolor...
Yeah, we moved into this house during lockdown, and I don't know why I film in front of this wall, which is the only piece of decor in this house we've moved into that I absolutely hate, because that's just a bit of wallpaper. It's not actually a wood effect. That's not real wood behind me. I know you thought I was in like a log cabin or something, and it's absolutely awful. It's coming down in January after we've got past Christmas, trust me. Anyway, no one cares about that. People care about the NFL. So let's crack on and talk about last week and looking forward. And we'll start off with the good. And I want to start off with this, the new generation or the up and coming generation of wide receivers, because we saw some pretty stunning performances from maybe guys we've got used to seeing pretty stunning performances from, but second year, third year guys absolutely tearing up the league, Simon.
And three in particular, really. And you look at Deebo Samuel, AJ Brown, and DK Metcalf. I suppose you throw it into the context of that draft last year and you look at some of the other players that were drafted. Paris Campbell, Hollywood Brown, who we talked about last week, is in that veering towards bust territory.
N'Keal Harry.
N'Keal Harry obviously has really struggled. I think what's interesting is how these three, and especially Brown and Metcalf, have just become elite NFL receivers. And you look at the damage DK Metcalf did to Darius Slay at the weekend, one of the top 10 cornerbacks in the NFL. I think he had 10 catches for 177 yards. Slay was absolutely bossed all over the field, lost 50-50s, contested catches. And what I love that what DK does is he's so feisty, so nasty. He just gets in people's heads right from the get-go. It's one thing that you're lined up against him, and he's big, he's physical. You know, he's going to win at the catch point. He's going to go up and get the ball. He'll out-jump you, he'll out-muscle you. But he's also going to get in your head right from the get-go. He's going to be pushing you. He's going to be shoving you. There's going to be a fight. I mean, I think the last three games I've seen DK Metcalf play, he's got into fights with cornerbacks, which is kind of what you want. The team rally behind him. AJ Brown is not that kind of guy in terms of the fighting, but by God, he's physical. And you know, the Titans, when Arthur Smith feeds AJ Brown early in a game, you know that he's primed for a massive showdown. And I think I'm going to talk about the 49ers later on, but Samuel's 11 catches for what was it, 11 for 133 yards in this run-in that the 49ers have got. If they can keep him healthy and if he can show up like that week after week, they've got a real chance of making an NFC wild card. But these three are indicative of the way that the receiving situation is going. And also going back to look at Ole Miss, where AJ Brown and DK Metcalf played with each other.
I mean, that's terrifying.
In the SEC, and yet were not a very good team. I mean, what on earth were they doing offensively? to not get into the national championship playoff, or in terms of recruiting, whoever the receiver recruiter is needs to be promoted immediately. Everybody else fired. Damning indictment of Ole Miss recruiting.
to It's a great point you made about DK Metcalf, because I remember the week, I think it was week three when they played the Patriots, and everyone was talking about how is he going to handle Stephon Gilmore because he's so physical, and he just seemed to rise to that challenge completely. And obviously there were quotes before the game against the Eagles from Jim Schwartz basically saying, you're not Calvin Johnson, Megatron yet. And that, he kind of took that personally and put the chip on his shoulder. And I think you saw in the first quarter, you know, they kept trying to rough him up. There was a unnecessary roughness penalty on Malik Jackson, I think it was, down near the red zone. And he just seems to thrive off that sort of stuff. And I'll leave you with an open goal here, Willie, because I know you want to talk a little bit about Deebo Samuel. But of all the 49ers injuries this year, you know, that one's kind of flown under the radar. He came back earlier than expected and probably wasn't quite right when he first came back. But, you know, you go back to that Super Bowl, and correct me if I'm wrong, Willie, but he was probably their best defensive player in that Super Bowl and such a key part of that offense in terms of the way Shanahan wants to run the scheme and getting the ball in his hands.
Yeah, and I think it's indicative of what they've done with that wide receiver room in general, what you saw from Manny Sanders last year as well, the physicality, the willingness to block downfield, the work they've done with Wes Welker has been absolutely phenomenal, and obviously with Shanahan, etc. as well. And that's, Samuel is as key to the offense as George Kittle at times. Like, he is that level of player to them, and it showed on Sunday, and it will show in the run game as much as it will in the passing game as well. And that's the thing, you talked about physicality. All three of those guys, different sizes and shapes, obviously, but all of them incredibly physical when it comes to that. And like the other big wide receiver performance we saw this weekend, obviously, was 209 yards in the first 14 minutes from Tyreek Hill, who is a guy who is, you know, smaller than Liam, but is just like his physicality at the catch point is ridiculous.
Will's never seen me play defensive back. I would definitely have shut him down completely in that game.
Shut him down completely. Definitely. 100%.
We should mention Justin Jefferson as well, because he had two touchdowns and stepped up without Adam Thielen. And just on the Eagles, obviously they took Jalen Reagor a pick before him. The previous year they took Artega Whiteside before DK Metcalf. Can you imagine how much different that offense would look with Metcalf and Justin Jefferson as the wide receiver option?
Jefferson has to win Offensive Rookie of the Year. I mean, I know that Justin Herbert's been great and quarterbacks, you know, historically tend to win those awards. But Jefferson, you look at his yards per catch as well. I think, certainly I didn't check it this week, but last week when he was against the Bears, I think it was something like 18.3 yards per catch. I mean, it's phenomenal for a rookie receiver to do what he's doing. And, you know, you look at the Keenan Allen's, the Devontae Adams, is those kind of guys who are the elite route runners, but who don't run 4.4s. You know, these are 4.5 guys. Jefferson was a late 4.4, early 4.5 guy, but an outstanding route runner coming out of LSU. And I just think proves time and time and time again. You look at the struggles that Henry Ruggs is having, for example, you know, an absolute blazer, but isn't a particularly refined route runner. And he's, you know, he's struggling, whereas Jefferson, he's absolutely flying because he understands the nuance of how to run an NFL route. And I think that's so important.
We've talked a lot about AJ Brown there already, but the Titans' dominance in general makes our list as well an absolute destruction of the Indianapolis Colts. And okay, you have to say that they hugely missed the pieces that they missed on the defensive line, which just allowed them to absolutely run all over them with Derrick Henry. But because the Titans' defense hadn't lived up to hopes and expectations this year, they just had zero pass rush and the defensive backfield was injured horrifically throughout the first 8-9 weeks. I just never really necessarily bought them as not a playoff contender, but as a contender once they got to the playoffs, if you know what I mean. I think that this was a bit of a statement win this weekend, Liam.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing that's kind of standing out to me is it's very similar to last year in the way that Henry's kind of like beginning to completely take over now. If you look at last year when he led the league in rushing, he only had one 100-yard game before week 10. As the season got older and, you know, players get injured, people are more tired, he just seems to, his conditioning level is astonishing. He just seems to go up more gears the later into the season it gets. And that's now 8 straight road games of 100 rushing yards, I think, which is the second most of all time behind Barry Sanders. He had 124 yards after contact in this game, which is in itself only two other running backs had more yards, rushing yards all week. And as you say, there's been a small defensive improvement. They're not being shredded like they were. And if they can control the clock with Henry and just keep him going, then all the signs are looking good for them.
I think the point that Liam makes about him getting better is an absolutely apposite one. I think he averages 88.9 yards per carry. Per game in December. Per carry would be phenomenal, but per game, which is up from his second best month, which is November, where he averages 70 yards per game. You know, so he's averaging an extra 18 yards per game as the season goes on with the wear and tear and the hits that he takes on that 252-pound body. That is astonishing. But I think the Titans are just playing superb complementary football. You know, they're getting absolutely everything they can out of Ryan Tannehill. And if I think if they can get Corey Davis going, you know, at a week-in, week-out consistency level, you know, down the stretch and into the playoffs, they could beat anybody on any given day. The question is whether that defense could hold up, for example, against the Chiefs in Arrowhead. And I'm not sold that it could. But I think, you know, you saw what they've done to the Colts. You saw what they did with Pittsburgh. You know, they're a missed field goal from Stephen Gostkowski away from going to overtime in that game. They are legitimate challengers. And whilst they are flawed, there are lots of teams in this league this season that are flawed. And, you know, I think if they can cover up as many of their flaws as possible and they've got a great coach, they could go all the way. And just a point on the coach, actually. I think the sort of thing that he did last week where he got in the face of John Harbaugh and was giving him shit on the side, you know, that's the sort of thing that can really galvanise an already galvanised team. Do you know what I mean? The rallying round of a coach at this point of the season is hugely important. And to see your coach go over there and just give it to a rival head coach, I thought was an outstanding move, and it's the sort of thing that a team is going to love.
Talking of things that are... I was trying to think of the best way to link this because you said something during that sentence about something being awful, but let's just talk about the NFC East, which suddenly isn't awful, which is suddenly incredibly compelling. Washington have won 3 of their last 5 games, and the 2 that they've lost have both been by 3 points. New York have suddenly turned up and started playing. They're both on 4 wins now. Daniel Jones' injury could prove a problem, but the Giants have just won 3 straight, having lost to the Buccaneers by 2 points and the Eagles by 1 point in the 2 games prior to that. You know, suddenly we were saying that there's not going to be a team that's going to get past 5 wins in this division. And okay, it still might be won by a 6-10 or a 7-9 team, but 2 teams are showing up. It's getting exciting down the stretch. And yeah, just shows football teams can actually be competitive no matter how bad we think they are, except for the Jets.
You say it's the worst league, but actually it feels like it's the best in a way, because it is the most competitive, it's the most exciting. And I think what Liam said last week is absolutely prescient, which is that the Eagles, who at this point last week were leading the division, are now almost certainly going to finish last. I mean, their coaching, their play is just astonishingly bad. The value of good coaching is really coming home to roost in this division, because, you know, you look at the 2 teams now that are pressing forwards as we hit the home stretch, which is the Ron Rivera coach Washington football team and the Joe Judge coach New York Giants versus the very poorly coached Mike McCarthy Dallas Cowboys and the equally poorly coached Doug Peterson Philadelphia Eagles. And the last week of the season is Giants Cowboys Philadelphia against the Washington football team. And you just know that that division will be solved, will be sorted on that final.
They'll put both those games in the 9 p.m. window and they have them on at the same time, and then Sky will have no idea which game to pick from the two, and it'll be hilarious.
Everybody will be watching Red Zone anyway, so as not to be short Gale. Yeah, I said it.
Yeah, and we all thought it. I think, Liam, that brings us quite nicely on to our, from good to our bad, because on the point of the Eagles' terrible coaching, game management, or should I say game mismanagement, and not just from bad head coaches this weekend like Cliff Kingsbury and Doug Peterson, but Andy Reid as well. This feels like something about once every 4 or 5 weeks we come back round to it and rant about it and rave about it. But all the talk of analytics and when you should go from fourth down and all of that stuff, how are these people getting game management so wrong still, week in, week out?
There's a few other ones as well. The Anthony Lynn one, where the Chargers were in a hurry up right at the end of the game where they needed 2 scores right on the goal line and then ran a running play, which was just summed up.
Yeah. He did it twice.
So no timeouts.
Summed up his entire sort of coaching. And then we mentioned the Dallas game, the fourth down play where they did the sort of end around to Cedric Wilson, I think it was. And then, to be fair, had they built in a passing option on that play, they would have been able to complete it. But that was like...
Hunter was wide open on that play.
And these are decisions that cost them. You know, they were still in that game against Washington. And after that, I think Washington scored either on the next play or the play after, and that was over. As you mentioned there with Doug Peterson, you've got to know the situation. You've got to know that you've got Carson Wentz as your quarterback. Andy Reid has to know he has Patrick Mahomes as quarterback. You can't have a one-size-fits-all mentality. And it seems to be the same culprits every week as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, Doug Peterson, they were down 2 scores, i.e. 1 field goal and a touchdown with a conversion. There was 8.5 minutes to go, and they were in chip shot field goal range, and they went for it on 4th and 4 and didn't make it. And you just think, what on earth postman. What on earth are you doing? Just astonishingly bad coaching. Astonishingly bad coaching. And if you're one of those veterans like Fletcher Cox or Brandon Graham, you almost want to be going out to pieces and saying, what? You've just literally just cost us the game there.
And the reason I mentioned it's not just bad coaches is I still don't understand how Andy Reid, on fourth and half a foot from the goal line, goes for a chip shot field goal in a game where the Ducks very nearly came back, like they really shouldn't have done. It's a game that you should have dominated. But I know that hindsight is 20/20 on these things, but saying hindsight is 20/20 when we're all watching those plays before they happen and screaming at the TV, what are you doing? Or like you say, if you're on the sideline, you've just got to have your head in your hands going, what is this? What on earth are you thinking? So it's just a little rant. I had to get it out of my system. Also talking about bad, and another one that's come up quite a few times this year, the Bears quarterback situation, Monday Night Football, Bears Packers. I mean, 16 points ended up looking respectable because of a couple of garbage time scores, but I think you summed it up pretty perfectly, Simon. If there's one thing to take away from that game, it's that the Bears really haven't got an option at quarterback.
Yeah, it was the definitive moment, I think, in terms of knowing. You know, he'd been out. Matt Nagy talked about it was the best week of practice he'd ever had, because God knows I'd hate to have seen one of his worst weeks if that was the reaction from a best week of practice. And he laid an egg. You know, he just didn't play very well. They probably wasted one of David Montgomery's best games. And it's not like they're not without talent, both at tight end and at receiver, with Allen Robinson, Darnell Mooney. But Trubisky proved that he is not, definitively, is not the guy. And I think it will cost Matt Nagy his job. I'm certain it will cost Ryan Pace his job. And that's fine. If you're, you know, if you're a Bears fan, then you know that you are now officially moving on. Because Nick Foles, as much as we all like Nick Foles, he also isn't the guy. But that was a statement performance from Mitch Trubisky, and a bad statement.
You spend that bye week obviously sort of building a game plan around Trubisky, which is different with, you know, play action screens, all this sort of stuff. And then you're 24 points down midway through the second quarter, and it's like, we can't do any of that stuff. You know, Montgomery ripped off that huge run early on, and they were like, maybe we can establish a run, get it going. Didn't happen. And this was finally the week where the defense sort of didn't keep them in a game for a while. You know, Green Bay started 5 for 5 on third down. The next third down, they didn't complete. They went for it on fourth down and completed it. And it was just, yeah, they just got absolutely manhandled. And as you said, Simon, this is a definitive answer. If anyone thought that Mitch Trubisky was the answer beyond this season, then yeah, you got your answer. I know the numbers don't look too bad by the end, but that's just because of the garbage time stuff they got, as Will mentioned.
I heard an interesting comparison elsewhere from somebody who I think is a decent football mind, but saying that, look, everyone had written off Ryan Tannehill and said there was no chance that he was going to be the answer for any franchise. And I don't think any of us expected him quite to explode in the way he has in Tennessee. And maybe it's been the perfect situation, apart from you, Simon, of course. But the kind of the point they were making was that Ryan Tannehill came third in that draft after two quarterbacks who were expected to go in front of him, and nobody kind of batted an eyelid then when he wasn't the guy. The fact that Trubisky has to constantly hear about the fact that the Bears didn't take Deshaun Watson, didn't take Patrick Mahomes, it feels like he's getting buried in a way that maybe we wouldn't bury a guy who was taken later in the first round. Is that fair?
There is something to that, but there's also just, you know, his performances, just put them on paper or watch the film, and it's a stark realization that he just isn't an NFL quarterback. And I think it's also an indictment of starts in college, which is an important statistic. You know, I think he only had 13 starts at North Carolina, only started for one season. And you look at some of those quarterbacks who only played minimal amounts of games, Mark Sanchez being another one at USC. I think quarterback starts in college are really important. And in terms of stats, I also think quarterback wins is one of the worst statistics in football. You know, Mitch Trubisky was 3-0 coming into that game in Green Bay. So if quarterback wins are important, they shouldn't be anymore, because that blew up in everybody's face at the weekend. So if you're one of those stats geeks who thinks that quarterback wins is something that should be nurtured and loved, well, I've got a news for you, and it's not good.
I guess I'd counter that, Will, by saying, do we think he'd have had the opportunities he's had he not been picked so high? And he probably wouldn't have been the starter going into this season. Would he have even had another chance this year? I'm not so sure.
Also, trading up for him as well was, you know, you're giving up picks to go and get this guy too.
It does feel like Pace and Nagy are pretty much saying, we know our career rests on this guy, so let's hit and hope. And it's not worked out for them. Two guys who very much will likely find themselves out of a job at the end of this year. And there's going to be a lot of head coaching vacancies to fill this season, it feels like. We now have the Detroit Lions, who didn't tell us until Saturday they fired Matt Patricia, but he was definitely fired on Thanksgiving, leaving that building. Just told, don't worry about coming in tomorrow, mate. The Falcons, the Texans, we will have the Jacksonville Jaguars, because as much as they're keeping Marone around and they've got rid of Dave Caldwell, I think we'll have the Bears as well. There's arguments that places like Cincinnati might move on from Zach Taylor, although he might be saved by the Joe Burrow
Denver,
injury, to be honest.
Vic Denver, Fangio.
Vic Fangio, there's a lot of conversation around that. The Jets,
J-E-T-S.
Definitely a job that's going to be up. It's astonishing Gase hasn't gone already, even though there's a lot of conspiracy theory about keeping him there to get Trevor Lawrence. So, state of franchises in the NFL, which of those jobs actually appeals to a up-and-coming head coach, a hot candidate like an Eric Bieniemy or a Joe Brady or one of these guys that's going to get touted left, right and centre, Simon?
I think Atlanta is a decent shout. Good owner, an owner who doesn't jump to decisions, great stadium, decent fan base, decent amount of players. That, you look what the Falcons did to the Raiders at the weekend, winning 43-6. You know, there are good players on that team. You have a decision to make, obviously, around Matt Ryan. I think the Jets is an interesting one. You know, you're going to get Trevor Lawrence, and Joe Douglas doesn't look like a complete mug. Liam and I were talking at the weekend whilst the Miami Jets game was going on about Mims, Denzel Mims, the receiver, and, Trevor Lawrence is going to enjoy throwing to him. So for me, they are two very interesting jobs. I think Jacksonville is an interesting job. But again, Shad Khan is probably going to be a little bit like Arthur Blank in terms of, he's not going to, you look at Dave Caldwell's record. He lost 12, 13, 11, 13, 6, 11, 10 and 11 games in 8 seasons, and yet he still managed to retain his job. Whether you're going to get Justin Fields, there's clearly talent on that offensive side of the ball. James Robinson, LaVisca Chenault, DJ Shark. Defensively, you've still got Miles Jack. There's still young players coming through. Josh Allen, et cetera, et cetera. So, for me, those are three interesting positions. And then Detroit, I just blow Detroit up completely. And that means trading Matthew Stafford. And there will be teams out there that will be interested in taking a Matthew Stafford. You look at his cap number next year, it's $34.9 million. Why are you waving at me, Willie?
Oh, because I know a team that would probably take Matthew Stafford.
Oh, yes, the 49ers. I was going to get to them, yeah. His dead cap hit is $24 million. He's due a $10 million roster bonus on the fifth day of the 2021 league year. But they've not won a division title in his 12 years. They've not won a playoff game or even hosted a playoff game. And this will be the fourth straight season that they're going to finish last in their division. The Ravens did it in 2007 after going 13-3 with our own Brian Billick. What have you got to lose by getting rid of Matthew Stafford? You've got an awful lot to gain because you can draft another quarterback and you'll probably get a first round pick from somebody like the San Francisco 49ers who will happily take Matthew Stafford off their hands.
I think the Lions job, as you say, the one thing that stands out to me is they don't really have any good young players that you can kind of build around for the future. It does seem like it needs a massive reboot. Okuda struggled a lot this year as a lot of young rookie cornerbacks have done, but where's the player where you're saying that's the guy we're going to build around for the next 5 years? As Simon says, it just needs a complete rebuild. And I know that people aren't high on the Texans as a potential opening because they don't have the draft picks. We don't really know what's going on with Jack Easterby's kind of presence there still. And there are an awful lot of holes there. But every week I watch Deshaun Watson, I just think you are set at the most important position there. If you can just get a few pieces around him, then that's ready to take off.
I think my key with the ones that Simon mentioned first, Jacksonville, although it's obviously not a sexy pick from franchise perspective, but the Jets, I think they're all, and the Falcons are all going to be places that will have an element of patience with you when you come in. You're going to have 3-4 years. And I think that's the way, if you're going to bring in a new head coach and GM, in similarly to how San Francisco did, and similarly to how quite a few franchises. I mean, Matt Rhule is a prime example who's been able to go in, blow it up, and actually have a pretty competitive and successful first year, which no one necessarily expected. Gruden and Mayock, given those long contracts, like those are the ones that you kind of want. I don't think you're necessarily getting that in Houston. I think they might want success from day one, particularly if the likes of JJ Watt are still there, if you don't end up moving them on, which you probably should try and do where you've got no picks.
Where are these candidates? Who are these candidates? These hot coaches. We talk about Eric Bieniemy, Robert Saleh, obviously, is one of them, Matt Eberflus. But look at what the Carolina Panthers did with Matt Rhule. It's that thinking outside the box. And you look at somebody like a Joe Brady, for example. But you also go to the collegiate ranks and you look at a couple of coaches like Matt Campbell at Iowa State and Pat Fitzgerald at Northwestern. I'm looking for teams and for GMs who are going to look at that kind of thing rather than the old white retread that Matt Sherry loves so much.
But I mean, there are guys like Brian Daboll, who had one head coaching interview last year.
Yeah,
I bet he's interviewed for almost every job, if not every job this year. It seems to happen every season that there's a guy or two who teams take a little look at and then don't pull the trigger on, and then they end up becoming a really hot candidate the following season. And you just think about times where it's obviously not going to land every time, but you think about times where teams have taken a risk on a guy a little early, like Mike Tomlin, for example, who was never going to be the Steelers head coach and got given a nudge towards the Rooneys, and they ended up loving him and bringing him in, and look at the success he's had there. So, yeah, I'm with you. I think that don't go into it with the preconceptions. And actually, that's why I think we're seeing more and more coaches fired early, like in Carolina, because they had more time, they felt, to vet people. I don't understand why you can't do that while your head coach is in the building. Surely Adam Gase knows that you're vetting people for his job right now, but who knows?
Maybe he doesn't know. It's Adam Gase.
Okay, I won't make those assumptions. From the good to the bad to the ugly, a couple of obvious ones this week, but start off with Saints Broncos, which was an ugly game of football as much as it was an interesting game of football. Just completely open question. How do you feel about the NFL's handling about the Broncos situation, Simon?
I think it was absolutely fine. I think it's hard to blame the NFL for being unwilling to make any changes to the schedule, given how stringent they've been about adhering to the rules, which the Broncos clearly broke. The Baltimore situation is slightly different because it happened with a strength and conditioning coach, and it was clear that that COVID was rife amongst their team and forced them to move. I mean, it was unsafe to play with 20 plus players missing, whereas the Broncos situation was very clear. The quarterbacks were in on an off day looking at film. They weren't socially distancing. They weren't wearing their masks, as definitively the rules stated. And I think that the NFL was right to do what it did. You know, it made a bit of a mockery of the game, and I felt extremely sorry for Kendall Hinton having to come in and do what happened. I also thought the game plan was pretty bad in terms of the way that they just... There were ways and means of moving the ball without having Kendall Hinton drop back to throw 13 times necessarily. You know, a few jet motions, a few sort of quick screens, those sorts of things, which they didn't really sort of do, which I thought was very odd. Although this, I think, is the best statistic I might have seen all season, that Kendall Hinton has more recently thrown a touchdown pass for Wake Forest in 2017 than Taysom Hill has, which he last did for BYU in 2016, which I think is arguably the greatest stat of the season, given the situation that we find ourselves in. I have no sympathy whatsoever for the Broncos or for their fans. I thought, you know, the rules are the rules, and they clearly broke them.
The one kind of team I do have a bit of sympathy for is Pittsburgh, because, you know, they got screwed over earlier in the year with the Tennessee situation and had to take their bye. I think it was week three or week four because the Tennessee game was postponed. They've now got this game against Baltimore. Everything's kind of messed up the rest of their season, and they've adhered to the rules all along. It's not their fault, and they're kind of being punished for it as a result. The Ravens are going to get a couple of players that they wouldn't have had this game been taken place on Thursday, Saturday, Sunday, or whatever other days have been proposed since the mass delays. And the thing about the NFL is people criticizing them, but the last thing they wanted was a primetime Thanksgiving game to be postponed. The last thing they wanted was a practice squad wide receiver going out there and putting on that product on the field. And again, no criticism for him because it's such a difficult situation. He didn't receive any reps or whatever, but it's affecting the NFL's products massively. And I think that the teams I feel sorry for are the teams who are indirectly affected by this, such as the Steelers.
Steelers have to play twice in four days, yeah. Don't they? That is ludicrous.
There'll be a great 30 for 30 on Kendall Hinton at some point. You've got to respect the guy for stepping in and doing it. I mean, the fact that he is the first quarterback in NFL history to have more interceptions than completions in a game just feels horrible. It just feels harsh on him because, like you say, the situation he was put in was just completely impossible.
Like somebody like Jerry Jeudy with all that speed, why is he not taking a shotgun snap and literally just tossing it to Jeudy on a jet sweep? Counts as a completion. Just get a bit of confidence up.
Yeah.
A couple of screen passes. I mean, this is not difficult, Pat Shermer. Why are you? He was looking, giving him sort of 3 or 4 seconds in the pocket, making multiple read throws. It was just like, come on.
What we're saying is Simon Clancy could have schemed up something better.
I mean, you've got an athletic offensive line. Let's run a few screens. I mean, come on.
Hope that I wasn't playing at cornerback, mate, batting all these.
Oh my God, here we go again.
Superb. But I echo all the sentiments about the Broncos. I've heard so much from Broncos fans who claim that they've been hard done by. To be honest, you were playing a Saints defense that had conceded one touchdown in the last 3 weeks against much better quarterbacks than Drew Locke, except the fact that you've got a better excuse for the loss than you would have had you had your starting quarterback in there, because you would have lost it anyway. Jared Goff, who I have heard from sections, and I don't want to agree with it because I want to claim that it was a brilliant 49ers win and a wonderfully schemed game, but he is essentially getting their loss against San Francisco put squarely on his shoulders by a lot of people. Is that fair?
No, I don't think so.
It was
Yeah,
pretty
but we
bad.
go through these things with, I mean, I know you and Matt had a big discussion about this on WhatsApp, and we sort of go through these
Argument.
things with Goff seemingly every sort of few weeks. I can't believe they sort of the Rams kind of allowed you to stick around in that game. You know, they should have put it to bed much earlier on. Goff has these performances every few weeks, particularly I find against division opponents that know him really well and kind of know how to scheme against him. So, I mean, he was bad, but I don't think he was solely responsible for the defeat, let's put it that way.
I think they're 4-0, 0-4, sorry, in the last four games against Kyle Shanahan. You know, that's a situation that Sean McVay has to sort out as much as Jared Goff. You know, and also people talk about, oh, so he's a system quarterback. Every quarterback is a system quarterback. You know, you're looking at Tom Brady and the situation in Tampa. He does not fit that system. Therefore, Tom Brady, the ultimate winning quarterback, is a system quarterback. You know, Patrick Mahomes will probably be great in a lot of systems, but the system that he's currently in is the one that suits his skills best. Jared Goff is a Sean McVay, quick read, short decision-making time, pocket passer. That's what he is. You know, you're not going to put him in a run and shoot offense because that wouldn't suit his skill set. You know, he would not fit in Bruce Arians' offense, but he does fit in Sean McVay's. But you have to take some of the rough with the smooth. He is inconsistent at times. But you know, you go back to the week before against Tampa, and I thought he was outstanding. You know, he had a great game against the Buccaneers and was one of the reasons why the Rams beat Tampa in that game. So, you know, what you see is what you get. I just think it's a damning indictment of Jared Goff in that particular game, where you're the second best quarterback in a game where Nick Mullins is on the other sideline. So, you know, sorry, Will, but you know.
No. I mean, I'm not defending Nick Mullins. It's fine. Although he seems like a lovely man. Sean McVay saying that and openly admitting to being the student to Kyle Shanahan's teacher on more than one occasion previously feels weird. Like,
Yeah,
it
McVay
feels like
has to
something you
sort that
shouldn't be
out.
saying about a rival head coach in the same division as you, even if you did come up working underneath him.
Do you think that if you are Les Snead, you would consider drafting a quarterback in the first three rounds in 2021?
I would look at, I mean, I always think about drafting a quarterback in the first three rounds of 2021 if you've not got like a top of the next season, if you've not got a top 10 guy. Like, I don't, if there's a good guy that's fallen to like late in the second or into the third round and you think that they could challenge and potentially be something, I don't have team issue with teams picking them up. This idea that quarterbacks are some fragile man-child that you have to look after and mold and stroke their egos and stuff, like, challenge them, push them.
I mean, look at this situation in Philadelphia. You know, we don't know what Jalen Hurts is going to be like, but at least there you have an option to go to, which they should be going to at some point very soon. But you know, let's say Goff starts next season as badly, then you've got a Jalen Hurts type figure that can come in at least potentially save your season if you're willing to turn it over to him. And as Will says, I don't buy this idea that quarterbacks are some sort of fragile beings that can't have that pressure put on them. And if they're any good, then hopefully they rise to that pressure and it pushes them on to be even better.
Alabama's Mac Jones is a perfect fit for Sean McVay's offense. And if he does slip down into that sort of late second, early third round area, I would be very interested to see whether or not the Rams would make a move for him because he is an absolutely perfect fit for that system.
Interesting. Interesting. The other thing that was ugly on Sunday was the Las Vegas Raiders. Just full stop. That is everything about what that organization did on Sunday, Simon.
I mean, it was horrendous. Five turnovers, four by Derek Carr, 11 penalties for 141 yards. They lost 43-6. A week after that outstanding performance at home where they went toe-to-toe with the Super Bowl champion Kansas City Chiefs. And what it did, it harked back to what happened in 2019, which was that they played pretty well, were 6-5, and couldn't finish. You know, they lost 34-3 to the Jets and ended up going 7-9. Well, this year they lost 43-6 to the Falcons. Is that going to be the same? You know, for me as a Miami Dolphin fan, it's outstanding because it feels like there's them and the Ravens because of the COVID situation, who are now going to fall out of the playoff race a little bit and allow teams like Miami and Cleveland to move on up. Was it a mulligan? Can 43-6 ever be a mulligan, or was that just a, you know, was that who the Raiders really are? It'll be very interesting to see how they perform this weekend because they need to get that performance out of their system very quickly.
I presume you've seen who they're playing this weekend because I think it's very
Is it the New York Football Jets?
it may be, yeah.
Oh, it's just mean. It's just
There'll be
mean.
no falling off the Trevor train this week then.
Absolutely not. Full steam ahead.
Good, good. Right, let's hear from Brian Billick, Super Bowl winning head coach with the Baltimore Ravens. Lots to talk about when it comes to that idea of franchise building, considering the situation we're finding ourselves in the NFL right now. And then we'll bring you our likes, our dislikes, our unsung heroes, and our game for this upcoming week in the NFL on the Gridiron Show.
I actually appreciate that because a lot of times people introduce me as former Super Bowl winning head coach. And I have to say, well, no, I'm still a Super Bowl winning head coach. They didn't take it away from me. You know, it's not time dated or something. So I appreciate that.
I've heard somebody called a former legend on the radio before. And I was like, what do you have to do to stop being a legend at a team? Like,
I got to tell you, I coach my grandson's third grade football team, which is a whole new experience. And one young kid come up to me and he goes, now you won a Super Bowl, right? I go, yes, sir, I did. He says, and you were the head coach. I said, yeah, I was. He goes, that's really great because most of those guys are dead. I said, okay, well, there's still a few of us kicking around here.
Yeah, so quite. I probably
don't know what his perspective was, but yeah.
Good. Considering we're talking about how it was a like nice, successful, long career, I want to talk about the tail end today, if that's okay, because we've got a situation in Detroit right now where the head coach, the GM, both moving on, and we were talking about it on the show today, but the possibility that they might just need to blow that whole thing up and start again, kind of not dissimilar to what you guys were going through in 2006, 2007. And you know, some people would say it was harsh that you go on the back of that season when, what did Bill Belichick say this year? That they'd sold the farm to get to where they'd got to. What's that process like when you've just got to go in and go?
And you have to make those decisions. We really did that transition after our Super Bowl. We made the conscious decision that we were going to try to hold that group together and make another run. Had a great defense, running game, and the like. So we extended ourselves within the cap. And every time we did it, Ozzie Newsome, our general manager, would come in and go, now, you know what this means for 2002. Right? We're going to have to clear the decks. We're going to even up the book, so to speak. And I go, yeah, got it. Well, so we go on, we go to the divisional, but we lose in the divisional round and it was all well and good. Well, the next year we had to clear the decks. And we were at the time, I think the youngest team in the history of the NFL. We had like 20 rookies. And sometimes you have to do that. And then we kind of parlayed our way through it and rebounded fairly quickly. 2007 was a little bit different, and it shows you how that, tenable the coaching situation is. Like Bum Phillips used to say, there's two types of coaches, them's that have been fired and them's that are going to get fired. The only difference now is it's also the GMs. It used to be just the coaches, but the GMs who really have most of the power on most teams, they're being held more accountable. And so you're seeing, I think we're going to have a record number of GM turnovers this year. So it's not just the coach, it's a lot more of the GM. We went in 2007, if I'm not mistaken, 13-3.
Yeah, you went to the divisional round against the Titans, right?
Correct. And I'm talking about in 2006, not our first Super Bowl, but the year before I got fired, we had a great year. We went 13-3. Steve McNair was our quarterback, and we lost to the eventual Super Bowl winner, Peyton Manning, and Indianapolis Colts.
Yeah, Indianapolis, yeah.
The next year, I lose Steve McNair, I lose Jonathan Ogden, I lose Ray Lewis, I lose a plethora of people. We go 5-11, and they fire me. That's after giving me a brand new 4-year contract the January before. I always tell people, I go, well, okay, you're looking at Coach Zimmer in Minnesota. They're going, well, he just got a new contract, he's okay. And I always say, no, that just means he's going to get paid. Doesn't mean they're not going to, because they'll fire you and pay you off in a New York second. Because coaches' contracts, unlike players, are all guaranteed. So when a coach gets let go, whatever years he has left, he gets that all. So what we're seeing now, which is a little bit different, is, as you alluded to, it's coaches and GMs, or sometimes just GMs. So we are in a little bit of different phase. And in Detroit, it's tough because, and it's the Ford family and their commitment to it, but they just can't seem to get it right, to find the right combination of GM and head coach to be together and create that unified vision. And that's one that's in particular that it's been a struggle.
How seriously do you think an organization like them or the Falcons being the other think prime example this year, teams who have very clearly a starting quarterback in the NFL, but have to look at it and say, are we going to win a Super Bowl in that quarterback's lifespan if we keep them and don't rebuild? How close do you think those teams could be to moving on from something?
Yeah,
like,
well, you always, when you look at the jobs that are available, and we'll start that on Black Monday, once the season's over, and it's always a tough time, particularly for me to talk about it because I've lived it. And you also realize you're just not talking about head coaches. You're talking about staffs and a lot of families being uprooted. But that's life in the NFL. And you look at the jobs, I'm always asked, okay, which of these are the best jobs? Well, it begins with the quarterback. Atlanta because of Matt Ryan, in my opinion, who's an excellent Matthew Stafford, proven quarterback. Those are very good jobs compared to a job that, okay, you got to go find a quarterback. It's good news, bad news. Good news is I've got a good quarterback. The bad news is if I don't win, then you're on a short leash because you don't have that excuse. If you don't have a good quarterback, you go, okay, well, these people understand I don't have a quarterback. Yeah, but we're still going to hold you accountable for the losses at the very least. And sometimes that prompts the move that says, okay, if we got to go get a new quarterback, let's go get a new coach too. It's like Johnny Lynn down in with the Chargers. Mm-hmm. His tough dilemma is they now have a great young quarterback. But Johnny Lynn's on his third year, and he hasn't won. So it's like, well, do we really want to go? We got the quarterback. Or are we just going to rely on that, and the coach is going to get better? Or do we want to kind of clear that deck and start anew with this young quarterback? Because that's usually the sequence that's most successful. So there's a lot of pressures, a lot of scenarios by which coaches are let go.
How would you rate in that mindset then something like the Texans job where the quarterback is there? That is, you have a top five guy, but you've got no picks this year, confusion about what the organizational structure is going to be, the one shining light, but everything else around it is currently in
fog. That's another one that they'll be lining up for that job. Because if I get to start with Deshaun Watson, I can fix all that other stuff. You know, as we talk about in my book, The Q Factor, the most difficult thing is identifying and getting that franchise quarterback. The rest of it, you can get right pretty quickly. And there's some that do and some that don't. And, you know, but if you can get the quarterback situation right and you have that right starting out, then you've got a pretty good leg up. Now, there's a lot of pressure because the assumption is, okay, you got the quarterback, so you better be pretty good quick. So it carries a lot of expectations. That's a lot better place to start than not having one.
And I guess then with the other two that are looking definite, I mean, Jacksonville and New York still have their coaches in place at the moment, but I think most people expect Adam Gase to leave this year, and the conversation with Doug Marrone is here till the end of the season, then they'll revisit it. But you're talking about two teams who are going to have a lot of picks and the chance to get a quarterback at the very top of the draft. And there's some guys that people really like coming out
this year. Is a good thing, other than, as we talk about in the Q Factor, you take a first-round quarterback, it's a 50-50 proposition. So there's a difference between, great, I have great potential to go get a quarterback, but history tells me I got a 50-50 chance of that working out versus me going someplace where I know I have the quarterback. I'm starting with Matt Ryan. I'm starting with Matthew Stafford. I'm starting with Deshaun Watson. If you got a choice, all things being equal, which they never are, of course, but all things being equal, one of those established quarterbacks or the potential to get one, most coaches, I'll take the established guy. Because they know, no matter how strong their confidence is and their ability to evaluate that taking a young quarterback is a nifty proposition.
That was what I was thinking as well. You say about the confidence. I think there's almost like an ego thing with it of that. I can fix this. I can solve that. I'm the guy who can do it with a franchise quarterback. And I don't know, self-assessment. I always think this about, for example, Adam Gase going straight into the next job rather than taking a year, learning, going back in. It always felt a bit rushed to me, and sometimes self-assessment, I guess, can be the hardest.
Yeah, but when an opportunity presents, these jobs are hard to come by. My voice said they're like a nice bottle of wine. If they were any worse, you wouldn't take it. If it were any better, it wouldn't be available to you. Okay, no one would give it to you. So that's kind of a fine line, but they're hard to come by. And I can certainly understand an Adam Gase going, boy, if I bypass this, I may not get another chance. And he took a risk, and he had to base that on. He obviously had to feel like Sam Darnold was a good prospect. That's why you evaluate these quarterbacks, even though you may not be in the market for one, because you never know when you have to make that decision later on, whether in free agency or maybe I'm going someplace. So I know Joe Douglas, who's the new general manager for the Jets, was with me in Baltimore as a young scout. Excellent scout, excellent general manager, I think. I know for a fact, he thought a lot of Sam Darnold. And one of the reasons he coveted the job was, okay, I think they're okay there. Well, and has come to find out, no, I don't think Sam Darnold's a guy. So I'll be very surprised if they don't make those moves. And particularly with the first overall pick, they will be in the Trevor Lawrence Derby and now got to go find the right coach to work with that.
And I think that's the other point of interest, isn't it, for this offseason, as much as it's going to be the head coaches, the GMs, the new quarterbacks coming in. It's what that does mean for Sam Darnold. It's what it means for guys like, I don't know, Carson Wentz, where he's going to end up this year. And whether we could see a whole big old merry-go-round of guys this season trying to find their feet somewhere else.
Yeah, and that's not untypical. you know, as we say in the Q Fed, there's always three things that you evaluate in a quarterback: physical skills, mental and emotional stability, and then the system he goes into. They all had the physical skills. Even the worst first round bust, Jamarcus Russell, Vince Young, Ryan Leaf, the list goes on and on. They all had the physical skills. In varying degrees, they either didn't have the mental and emotional, you know, ability to perform at this high level, and or they're with a system with multiple coaches, or they weren't being used right. And, you know, that confluence of the two that, you know, Sam Darnold is a perfect example. Is it his abilities, or is it the way he's been handled and the flux, you know, coming in with it? You look at Ryan Tannehill, looked like a classic bust, you know, but then gets a new scenario in Tennessee and flourishes. Now, that's rare. Some would look at Sam Darnold and say, okay, maybe that'll happen for Sam Darnold. Go someplace else, right? Circumstance. Maybe. I'm one that I'm not so sure, because what we're seeing is what we had questions about Sam Darnold going in was he didn't seem to show up in the big moments at SC. Had all the physical skills, had the people around him, did him, checked off all the boxes, personality and arm strength and all that. But he didn't show up in the big – I know a lot of people felt like he didn't show up in the big moments. And under the pressures, which every moment's a big moment in the NFL – he hasn't been able to show up. So now maybe he goes someplace else and like a Ryan Tannehill flourishes. Who knows? There are some people, and someone will bring him on as a you know, minimal cost. You know, if I get him as a free agent and he's a backup, and, you know, like a Mariota or Jameis Winston has gone someplace, you get him at the right price, then great. Absolutely give him the chance. Will they flourish? Man, who knows? But at least you're doing it with the right price.
It's an absolute pleasure, as always. Thank you great. So much.
We'll do it. Sounds great. We'll
chat again soon.
All right, well.
Brian Billick, joining us as always here on The Gridiron Show. Will Gavin, Liam Blackburn, Simon Clancy. Anyone want to take a like first from this past week?
Joey Bosa, 3 sacks, 8 tackles, 5 quarterback hits, 6 tackles for a loss, 1 fumble recovery. He was, prior to this week, PFF's best pass rushing grade among all pass rushers. And yeah, just having an astonishing season, which is kind of flying a little bit under the radar because the Chargers aren't very good. Obviously, Justin Herbert's rightly getting a lot of attention. And there was a lot of talk last year about how Nick was the better Bosa. And with Nick out this year, Joey just appears to be playing on another level. And yeah, fantastic, fantastic player.
The return of the 49ers is something I liked. You know, Deebo Samuel, we talked about, 11 for 133. Raheem Mostert played well. Richard Sherman back, had a pick and 7 tackles. They are coming. You know, they're one game out of the wild card race. They've got the Bills, the Washington football team, Dallas, Arizona and Seattle to finish. And it's not an easy schedule, but if they can win 4 out of those 5 games, they are right back in the mix. And that is not a team you want to meet in the playoffs.
I'm going to do a little like unsung hero co tie up thing for Titans cornerback Breon Borders, who had one of the worst dropped interceptions I have ever seen in my life, where basically Phil Rivers threw it onto his numbers and it was a pick six all day long. It was only about 15 yards from the goal line and he just took his eye off the ball a second too early, looked downfield, knowing what was ahead of him. As a guy who's bounced around practice squads for the last 3 or 4 years, as someone who hasn't caught on with the team and is finally getting a chance at some snaps, it was a heartbreaking moment. To then come back in the second half, get the game-sealing, essentially, interception later on, and had a really good second half in general in pass defense. It was just a lovely little bounce back, a lovely little story of a guy that's had to fight hard for his place in the NFL, and I absolutely loved it when I saw it. So I'm kind of bawling in a couple into two there. What about a couple of dislikes that you guys had from this week that we haven't talked about yet? Simon?
Zane Gonzalez, the Arizona kicker. A couple of weeks ago against the Dolphins, he was short on a 48-yarder that... I mean, how can you be short if you're an NFL kicker that clanged off the crossbar? And they ended up losing that game. And then he missed the 45-yarder at the end of the game with the Patriots and allowed Nick Folk to, or allowed the Patriots to drive down and Nick Folk to kick the 50-yarder to win the game. So if I'm Cliff Kingsbury, I am auditioning kickers this week, and I'm sure he has been, although it's Cliff Kingsbury. Well, maybe he wasn't.
Let's make no assumptions, if that's okay. Thank you, mate. Liam?
We should just mention the Cardinals, actually, because obviously the Patriots did a great job against Kyler Murray, and he made a point afterwards that on the option read stuff that they were basically keyed in on him. They were quite happy for him to hand the ball off to the running back, and Murray had only 5 carries, I think it was about 30 odd yards, and they're basically saying that they weren't letting him get outside. And I think might perhaps be a scheme that other people adopt. There's been three games this year where Murray's had five rushes or fewer and Arizona have lost all three against the Seahawks, Lions and the Patriots. So that is something to monitor going forward. My dislike was Sam Darnold's performance. Kind of run out of excuses here. All his receivers were back. Bad play calling, obviously, but he's now not thrown a touchdown in four straight games. The Jets have scored 3 points in two games combined against Miami this season. And there are obviously a lot of issues with that team. But Sam Darnold's kind of, he might get a chance at being a starter again next year. But the kind of notion that the Jets can hopefully kind of ride him out for the rest of the season and then they're set at that position and can look elsewhere is just disappearing rapidly.
The likelihood is once people are listening to this, week 12 will be concluded. But as of right now, we haven't had the Pittsburgh Steelers Baltimore Ravens game. We understand they got on the plane, so it's definitely going to be happening at the time we're speaking. We'll know the result in about 12 hours time. But let's start to look forward to week 13. It's difficult this late in the season to not pick kind of obvious games out. But Liam, I'll come to you first. What particularly stands out to you from week 13? Something you're excited to see?
49ers Bills, actually. I think that might be, we sort of talked about 49ers coming back in good recent performances. Josh Allen's always fun to watch. I'm kind of curious to see how that one goes because two teams that could well be in the playoffs. And yeah, I'm quite intrigued to see if the Niners can kind of keep this recent revival up and Bills are going to make a statement performance to kind of get in control of this AFC East.
Part of a little Monday night doubleheader as well with Steelers Washington being moved to the Monday. So, and with the Steelers having to come off that Thursday, the Wednesday game, we talked about Washington surging. I think that's a really nice, intriguing Monday night double bill. I'm going to plump for Cardinals Rams before Simon gets a chance to. Because
not my game.
Fine, good. Obviously, it's an NFC West clash, which gets me excited for it. But also, you talked about the playoff picture. I think it's really fascinating in the NFC and in the NFC West what they're going to do. The Rams struggling against divisional opponents. The Cardinals coming off one of their worst games of the season. So I think it's a really important game for both teams. And that often leads to plenty of intrigue. Simon?
I just quickly wanted to mention an unsung hero as well, which is Jeremy Chinn.
Oh, sorry. Unsung hero, my bad.
13 tackles, two touchdowns on back-to-back plays. First time in NFL history that's been done. You know, a kid from Southern Illinois who was taken in the second round. There's a lot of talk about him going in the first round. He has been absolutely outstanding this year. Still a little bit raw, but for me, he should be Defensive Rookie of the Year. And you look at his numbers, he has been everywhere. I think he's been outstanding. In terms of games of the week, I am very interested to see what happens between the Tennessee Titans and the Cleveland Browns. This is a statement game now for the Cleveland Browns. You look at their wins this season. Apart from the Colts, they have beaten the Bengals twice, the Washington football team, Dallas, Philadelphia, Jacksonville. In the three games that they've lost, they lost 38-6 to the Ravens, they lost 38-7 to Pittsburgh, and they lost 16-6 to the Las Vegas Raiders in a result that really was much worse than it looks on paper. So they scored 19 points against three teams, you know, three good teams, and they've only beaten one decent team, which is Indianapolis. I think this is a huge statement game to see exactly who these Cleveland Browns are.
That Browns-Titans game might be over in about an hour, given that he's going to try and run the ball loads. Yeah.
There might be 400 rushing yards in that game, and that might be being conservative. Boys, good fun. As always, don't forget to check out the social media channels at UK Gridiron on Instagram, at Gridiron on Twitter. You can find us there. We've got a YouTube channel as well. If you're watching this there, then check out some of the other content we're doing there. And that thing that people always do where they ask you to like, rate and subscribe, that stuff. If you could leave a review, it genuinely does help people find the show. And we are delivering it to you for free. The only thing we ask back is just a little 5 stars if you like it, a little comment to say how much you like it. It's not about inflating our egos because you don't need to do that any more than they're already inflated. It's more about making sure that more people do hear us because that will inflate our egos further. Thank you so much for listening/watching. This has been The Gridiron Show.
Hey, it's Austin James. Yes, I'm living with diabetes, but it doesn't have to define me. Thanks to the Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor, I get real-time glucose readings throughout the day. The Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor is small and easy to wear, giving me the freedom to focus on my life as a parent and a musician. Now this is progress. You can get a free sensor at freestylelibre.us.
Offer available for people who qualify. Visit myfreestyle.us to see all terms and conditions. Certain exclusions apply. Data on file, Abbott Diabetes Care, for prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.
Hey, it's Austin James. If you're like me, trying to live your best life while living with diabetes, you can relate to worrying if you're doing a good job managing your diabetes. I use the Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor to get real-time glucose readings and see the impact of every meal and activity to make better decisions. The Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor can help me live life with diabetes on my own terms, and it gives me more time for the things I love, like being a dad and a musician. Now this is progress. Learn more at freestylelibre.us.
For prescription only, safety info found at freestylelibre.us.